Welcome to Pints and Politics. I'm your host, Dan Parsons. This is actually episode number, 35. If you're following along at home, episode 35. And we're really excited to introduce our guests for tonight. But before I do that, I just want to remind you that, you know, we started Pints and Politics for the ability to talk about politics in a way that maybe we haven't done that very much. And that is in a cooperative attitude over a glass of beer. And so we're going to do that tonight with our guests. Let me introduce our guest, Brian Sloan, is the president of the Nebraska Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Brian, welcome.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and we've known each other for a few years, and I really appreciate the leadership you've provided over at the State Chamber. It's a big job.
It's a great job. It's probably one of the best jobs I've had in my life.
That's great.
It makes a difference.
Because you've had a few jobs.
I've had a lot of experiences.
Yes.
I have had a lot of experiences both here and overseas, and it's really sort of it's all fit together in a way that I think is relevant.
Well, let me just run through a little bit of your background, and then we'll get to the beer. But Brian's a Nebraska native, lived in several Nebraska communities, an attorney, an accountant, and before coming to the State Chamber, you were a tax attorney in Omaha. And in the 90s, I want to dig into this more, but in the 90s, you worked in Berlin, Germany as a tax attorney.
And that's both a beer and a political issue.
Exactly.
So we can cover that tonight, too.
I didn't think about that. And then, really, a fascinating part of your background for me, Brian, in the 1980s, you were in Washington for President Reagan, and kind of when I got my start in politics, because you were a legal advisor to the IRS commissioner, served on the House Ways and Means Committee as a staff member under our friend, former Representative Hal Duff.
Yeah, and really the IRS job was, there's no other way to put it, I was the commissioner's legal advisor, but also the IRS's lobbyist. And being the IRS's lobbyist will challenge you when you're dealing with Congress every day. But it was really one of the best learning experiences you could have asked for.
That's fascinating. And you actually helped shape the 1986 federal tax law.
Yeah, so the way those two things fit together, so got to work with Hal Dobb, who really was instrumental in that 1986 act, that Reagan's tax bill that created 30 years of economic growth. And Hal was knee-deep in that. So that was a wonderful experience. But then this huge act had to be implemented, and that's at about 27 years old, I got drawn into the implementation on the IRS side and saw it from the other side, and it was really good.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. As people probably remember, you were a candidate for governor back in 2014.
Thank you for reminding me.
That was a fascinating experience,
I'm
sure.
It was terrific.
Was that your first time of running for office?
It was first time running. Now, I've been around politics like you forever.
Yeah.
And always thought that I would run someday. Governor Heineman and I had been friends for 30 years, yep. Golfing partners, and so I knew and got to see it up close when he was governor, and so I knew what I was getting into, and really thought that my skill sets from my experiences really fit the job, and really had the time of my life in that campaign, other than the night when I lost.
Those nights are no fun.
They're no fun.
And I know a lot of people that were helping you. And in fact, we were having a discussion before you got here. I'm fairly certain, and I'm not just saying this because we're on camera, we're sharing a beer. I'm fairly certain I cast a vote for you. But anyway,
you know what my wife says?
Yes.
If half the people who said they voted for you really would have voted for you,
you'd be...
Pete Ricketts would be somewhere else and you would be governor right now.
Well, we'll have to look that up. You hold a law degree from the University of Nebraska. College of Law, and a bachelor's degree in business administration, also from UNL. Some fascinating experiences.
Yeah, just sort of a Forrest Gump life, really. Grew up in small towns in Nebraska, and I know a lot of young people ask me, so how do I plot out my career? There was no plot. I just had great mentors, from Hal Dobb, obviously being one of my first. The commissioner of the revenue at that time was a guy by the name of Larry Gibbs, who was this phenomenal tax attorney, and And then on through, I mean, we worked for Jim Baker at the time, and Reagan was an influence. And then all the way through my life, there's been these mentors, and I've just been fortunate.
That's great. Well, you're in a great position. I'm so thrilled that you're here tonight. Well, okay, we got that out of the way. Let's drink beer.
Get to the important part.
Let's get to the important. So tonight we're enjoying Burning Sky. It's a Scottish beer from our friends at Empyrean Brewing Company, also associated with Laszlo's restaurant, which is just across the street, conveniently for us. So cheers,
cheers,
Brian.
My friend. Yeah, I think Empyrean was the first or one of the first.
Yes, in Lincoln. Yes, they were. They kind of, and they made, this is a great beer. I drink this quite a bit. So let me talk a little bit, and we will put the notes, as we always do, at the end of the program on the website. So the Burning Sky is a Scottish ale, as we said, from Empyrean, brewed in the tradition of Scotland's malty sweet beers. It's sweet and smooth with a wee hint of smoked character. If we were eating, Brian, we'd be pairing this with grilled chicken, beef, barbecue, or wild game. So fire up the grill this spring. And
yeah, so I think this beer, for me, I, like a lot of people, I probably got drawn to this beer by the label. And you're embarrassed to admit that, but that's probably true. I'm half Scottish, and so Burning Sky Scottish style, you just had to try it. I thought of this when we were getting ready for this tonight, because I generally drink IPAs, and I got into some, and I like things with a little bit of bite, and I got into something that had a lot of bite last week, and I thought for tonight, let's tone it down a little bit. So there's a little bit more malt in this one, but it still has enough bite.
It does, yeah.
And so this is something that I could have with a meal and be very comfortable with.
Because it really does, yeah, and it's... It really is pretty drinkable. But you were mentioning that that you're a golfer. What are some of your favorite courses that you play?
So, you know, we are very fortunate in Nebraska. And I grew up playing golf and actually worked at Scottsbluff Country Club growing up. And that's how I paid for college.
Nice.
And I was the pro shop boy and the club cleaner and you name it at Scottsbluff Country Club. And I've played ever since around the world and met a lot of people. In Nebraska, we're spoiled because we have some of the greatest golf on earth. I go to Scotland quite a bit, but frankly, our Sandhills courses are just as good. I'm privileged to be a member of Prairie Club, and I also privileged to be a member of Omaha Country Club. And so that is one of the finest parkland courses in the country, and hosting the Senior Open this summer. But there are so many great courses in Nebraska. We are so fortunate. We can't take them for granted.
It's a great sport, and I suspect in your role as president of the state chamber, that comes in handy when you get to entertain state senators and other lobbyists.
Yeah, so I'm a big golf and baseball are probably my the two sports. What I love about them is they're conversational sports. You get 4 hours. With a group of people on a golf course. At a baseball game, you have time to talk and time to analyze and time to watch the baseball game. And so I love those two sports.
I'm a big baseball fan myself. I can't wait to get back at Haymarket Park and see the Huskers this spring. But I'm one of those nerds. You wouldn't enjoy my company at a baseball game, Brian, because I'm one of those nerds that keeps a scorecard. And so you can talk to me, but you can't talk to me real in depth because I'm watching every pitch and I'm keeping score. So I'm not really entertaining at the ballpark.
See, I don't have that problem. Same with golfers that remember every shot. I'm not one of those.
Well, kind of takes some of the joy out of it.
I do it just for the joy, but it's probably how people approach things. I was fortunate enough, and this is probably the last of the history, but when I came back from Germany, I actually started a law practice in Baltimore with a partner there, and he was a part owner of the Orioles.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm an Orioles fan, and Cal Ripken was playing, and so I got to watch Cal once or twice a week a lot.
Oh,
and,
man.
He was He's a hero for me.
So Yankee Stadium, been the old original, or?
So I'm not ashamed to admit this. I've never set foot in Yankee Stadium and never will.
Never want to.
I'm an Orioles fan.
That's a true, yeah.
I once took my family when the kids were in junior high to New York, and we did everything in New York, and I took them to the Mets playing Cincinnati when the Orioles were playing the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, and my son was furious at me, and I said, "Son, we will never, ever set foot in Yankee City."
I love it. It's like the Huskers and Sooners, and Huskers in Texas, and
absolutely,
yeah, those rivalries. Well, so I'm interested in what has shaped you politically, Brian, because your role at the State Chamber, it's not an apolitical position, but at the same time, you have to be able to negotiate and discuss some very serious, from tax issues to economic development and job creation, with the most unique legislative system in the world. And what a pleasure, I assume, to do that.
It's a very special place. I mean, the unicameral is a very special place, and because it is nonpartisan, it requires you to be political in a very different way, which is, on any given day, you don't know who the 33 are that are gonna move something for you. My background politically, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family with parents that loved politics and loved dinner conversation. And it was the 60s, and the 60s were much more politically charged than even now.
Yeah, that's a really good observation, Brian, because you know what we've been through these past 4 years and just this past year, for most people that are younger than us, just think that these are such unprecedented times, and they are. Let's face it, they were unprecedented times, but there is some parallel, and some even more difficult times back in the 60s.
Yeah, the issues were, I think, were even more difficult then, and you had, you know, I think, generally speaking, great leaders come out of difficult times. And so, you know, even though I'm a conservative, John Kennedy is one of my all-time heroes. And really, if you read his speeches today, I think they would warm most conservatives' hearts.
Yeah, he would be today a very moderate to conservative Democrat.
But arguably came in at one of the toughest times ever in terms of the Cold War. I worked for Reagan. Reagan was the same way, post-Carter, one of the most difficult times for our country. I think difficult times breed really great leaders from both sides.
Should be.
And I even now when I'm talking to my friends over a beer about the politics today, my conservative friends are concerned that the world is, you know, never going to recover. My liberal friends are concerned about conservatives. Great leaders are going to show up out of this crisis. And I would argue even, so obviously I ran against Pete Ricketts, and we don't always agree on everything. But I would say with this COVID situation, he was steady.
Yep.
He listened to the health professionals. Mm-hmm. He didn't overreact, and he was very transparent.
Yes.
And I've told Pete that I think he was a great leader because of the circumstances. And I think the same thing will happen on the federal level, is we will see great leaders emerge at some point here.
Well, we're certainly due for that, because this has been an unprecedented, obvious time in our history. So some of the issues that you're dealing with in the legislature, how does that background, well, let me back up a minute, because I'm fascinated by your time in Germany as a tax.
So tell me how that
happened.
That was good, and again, that was a Forrest Gump sort of experience. I was in a Washington law firm, so when I finished with the Reagan administration, it was abrupt. What I didn't understand, I was a little naive, was George Bush Sr. was coming in, and my job was tied to the commissioner. And the commissioner walked into my office one day and said, "I'll need your letter of resignation." I had assumed that since there was a new Republican president coming in, I would
at least
continue.
Get a chance for an interview.
No, it was, thank you very much for your resignation. And so suddenly I didn't have a job. And the firm that hired me, a law firm in Washington, it was the most Democrat law firm in Washington, Lloyd Cutler's firm. He'd been the White House counsel to three Democrat presidents.
Yeah.
And they were looking for two or three Republicans to balance out their efforts. And so Boyden Gray and I and a couple
I know
others
that name. Yeah.
Came on board.
Yeah.
And it was this incredible experience and learned a lot about practicing law. But I was a bankruptcy attorney at the time. And this firm, when the wall came down in Berlin, the East Germans had to privatize all their companies because the government owned them. They figured out that the only way they could practically do it was to bankrupt them all and run them through their bankruptcy code.
Oh, so you were valuable.
And so the lawyer in Germany who had written their bankruptcy code and I formed a law firm, the two of us with two desks, in the old secret police headquarters in East Berlin.
Wow.
And started a law firm that still exists today. That worked on those privatizations.
And, fascinating.
But what it impressed upon me was I got to spend a lot of time in East Berlin after the wall came down, and I got to see socialism up front and communism up front. And it was pretty bleak and pretty miserable.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably saw the worst of the worst. I mean, those were fascinating times to have been there and experienced that.
Yeah, I never want to be in a society that drives the same car and has the same apartment and everything is gray and nothing is different.
Yeah.
And so I think when we look at politics today, I like diversity in politics and I like lots of different views. And I hope neither party sort of collapses around there's only one view, because there isn't.
So how, that's fascinating, Brian. We could do a whole podcast talking about that, because I suspect you were able to enjoy the food and drink of Germany and all those things. So were you married at that time?
I was married, had small children. Actually, my wife, they were looking for a volunteer to go, and she was the one that suggested it. And so off we went.
Wow.
And the kids became fluent. And in Germany, in those days, I assume they still do, beer came just like milk in the morning. They would put it on you put your empties out at night, and the new ones come in the morning.
Well, we've kind of done that here.
You've done a good job.
In the COVID days, we can order beer to show up on our doorstep, or we can go and I think the legislature just today extended maybe they didn't pass it. You can help me out, but I read a headline where the to-go alcohol is going to continue to be allowed. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think people have been having conversations about politics over beers as long as there's been politics. And I do think, the story I like to tell is one of my favorite towns in Nebraska is Pender. And Pender, for those who don't know, has undertaken some incredible economic development as a small town.
Because of the tornado.
It was floods.
Floods,
started.
I beg your pardon, yes.
And really they'd had two factions in town for a long time. And that was, they really couldn't get the town all together around where they were going to go and what they were going to do. And it was really over a beer that the two factions solved their problems.
Well, you are the typical guest that we've wanted to highlight here on Pints and Politics, so that's great. So, okay, so that history of Washington, Germany, Omaha, now Lincoln as the president of the state chamber. What are the issues that, obviously COVID, job development, tax policies, property taxes, what are you working on this session, and what do our viewers and listeners need to know?
Yeah, I think, you take all that put together, and what I've learned is there's some simple truths to both politics and law and basically life at this point. And while every generation says everything's all brand new and these are new problems and we can't have the old solution, it's the same stuff regurgitated from generation to generation to generation. There's some basic rules. One, whatever you tax, you get less of. And so Nebraska is one of the highest tax states, is heading that way to be a high tax state in the country. We know from New York and California's experience that is not a place we want to be. And so we're involved right now in setting up a tax modernization effort to really reduce taxes across the board and fundamentally rewrite our tax system in Nebraska, which is a 1960s code.
Yep.
So that's one. Two, COVID liability. Businesses are concerned as they reopen, am I going to get sued? by people that say they got COVID at our businesses. So there's a bill that we've helped in the legislature to try to address those. Those would be the two biggest issues right now we're dealing with. But I think that the third and bigger issue is we work very hard on Blueprint Nebraska.
Yeah.
Nebraska is at this moment in time in history where we're never going to be more competitive than we are right now. We're coming out of COVID as strong as any state. Young people, old people, everybody is looking for a different quality of life that we have right here. This is this incredible moment for Nebraska to really take on some game-changing efforts to market our state.
So what does that look like? And as our viewers and listeners know, we're in the heart of the startup community here in Lincoln, Nebraska, in the Haymarket, Fuse Co-working, and even though the pandemic has kind of maybe knocked us off our feet, there is such an energy in this city, and I know in Omaha, and hopefully in other communities across Nebraska, that there is this insatiable desire to not only keep our young people and young professionals here, but continue to attract those young people and other professionals, they have to be young, to come to Nebraska to grow a family, grow a business. And to me, it's I've lived in Nebraska my whole life, and this is to me the most exciting time to be here.
It is, and what we need to do is exactly what you're doing. The effort's going to be led by innovators and entrepreneurs, and always has, always will in Nebraska. And we need to start telling the stories. And we need to start celebrating the young entrepreneurs and innovators who are already here, because you meet them every day. I meet them every day. Their stories make me look like a slug. and I always feel guilty when I hear their stories. There's some people in this state, and young people particularly, doing some incredible things in every community around the state.
Yes.
We need to start telling the story. We need to create that ecosystem. Because this is the place you can run a global business from a small community in Nebraska and have that same quality of life, where you can go home for lunch and go to your kids' ball games, and you can have it all right here.
You can. We had our last episode, we talked about broadband in Nebraska, a crucial, obviously, issue, and it's even become more important now through COVID. And there are, like you, we didn't compare notes of what communities in Nebraska that you've been involved in, but I was born here in Lincoln. My family moved out to Western Nebraska when I was junior high age. I graduated from high school in Ogallala. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that I was from Western Nebraska has helped my career in politics and public relations, because you do understand what people in greater Nebraska face from economic development, job growth, and I wasn't involved in agriculture, but still, those communities across this state have a great story to tell and opportunity.
Yeah, and there's many of them that are thriving. So 8 years ago when I ran for governor, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But today, if you travel the state, these communities, many of them are thriving. And the people I know, when I took my wife out, so I'm from the Panhandle as well, in many
Scott's
respects,
Bluff,
Scott's
right?
Bluff, Gearing, and my wife was not. And so when she went on this on the governor's campaign with me 8 years ago, and she met all these people that I knew in Cherry County and Saline County out here in Crete, and then got farther out west to Scott's Bluff and North Platte and Ogallala, she said, okay, I finally get it.
Yeah.
I finally get why you love this place.
Oh, it's amazing, the terrain and the people. I've lived, obviously, the majority of my life here in Lincoln, but I feel badly for those people who only commute from Lincoln and Omaha to their jobs, or maybe they'll go on I-80 out to see the cranes here this time of year out to Kearney or something. Get off the byways and get out there, and it's an amazing state. As we begin to kind of wrap up, Brian, I want to ask you, what is it with Blueprint Nebraska that has the opportunity to continue to advance this state? I mean, what's the latest with Blueprint Nebraska, and what are some of the things that you're doing?
So I think, the kind of the last most important thing is just common sense. And we were talking about Western Nebraska. There's more common sense out there than you're going to find most anywhere in the world. Blueprint Nebraska is just sort of a common sense approach. What do we have to do to be competitive with peer states? It's just, what are they doing that we're not doing, and what are we doing well, but where do we need to catch up? And, you know, a lot of it is we need to attract more people. And that's going to take a marketing campaign. It's going to take a very substantial marketing campaign, but we're at that moment where we have exactly the right thing to market at exactly the right moment. And shame on us if we don't spend a bunch of money and effort trying to do that.
Yeah, and we do, and especially coming out of this pandemic. I mean, we've learned a lot, and I think one of the things we've learned, at least I have, is we need more of this. We need to be able to connect with one another, and you know, thankfully we've had the technology to do that, although in some places in the state that technology is still emerging. But the fact that we can continue to grow this state through technology and our agriculture base. I mean, obviously, yep. Agriculture is going to continue.
Ag's a technology business now. Manufacturing's a technology business.
It is.
What I would say is we should never take this state for granted. Unless you've lived other places around the world, you don't maybe appreciate what this state really is about and the people in this state. Yeah. There's nothing like it in the world. Yeah.
Any goals? This is a natural question.
Yeah.
I set you up for it, but any interest in running for political office again someday, Brian? Do you want to make any announcements to our...
I would say no announcements. I've always told people I've got another race in me.
Yeah.
When I ran 8 years ago, it was basically I went to my wife and said, I'm going to commit the rest of however long I work to trying to make this state better. And that's still the deal.
Yeah.
So whatever the right role is at the right time, and I'll leave open the possibility
Good.
Of another
well,
race.
Well, smart, intelligent, resourceful entrepreneurs, we need more of folks like you. And little known fact, my friend Holly, who's your communications director, I used to have her job way back in the day.
That's right.
So I was at the state.
You know how difficult that job is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's changed a bit since I was about your age when you were doing your wonderful stuff in Washington. I was just a kid. It's like, what am I doing here? So thanks to your staff.
Yeah, they're great.
For making
they're great. And the members and the board of the chamber. It's,
yeah.
It's a great gig.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate to have this job.
Yeah, well, it's an important job, and we really appreciate you being here. Okay, with that, let me thank our sponsors. In addition to the Nebraska Chamber of Commerce and Industry, which has proudly served as the voice of the Nebraska business community since 1912, your 1,200 members statewide, Parsons Public Relations is proud to be one of those members. A mission to protect all aspects of free enterprise system while making Nebraska an even better place to do business. So thank you to the Nebraska Chamber of Commerce and Industry. The Nebraska Horsemen's Benevolent Protection Association, we are thrilled to be that they are continue to be our sponsor. Pints and Politics producer, Mr. Steve Van Hoosen behind the camera. We never get to see Steve. Nobody knows what he looks like. Ms. Kim Remington, the operations manager at Parsons Public Relations. You might be hearing some music right now. Pints and Politics theme music by Jack Rodenberg here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Thanks to Fuse Co-working and Parsons Public Relations for this space. And to my guest, Mr. Brian Sloan.
Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
I enjoyed it.
Cheers. We'll do this again.
That's absolutely.
Thank you.